Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for you today in digest format, World Radio Magazine, the online edition, for August 2010. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Andy Hemp System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Hemp members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hemps may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyhem@courage.org. Our website, www.handyhem.org. Let's begin today with Online Newsfront. Dayton Hamvention attendance trends upward. The official attendance for the 2010 Dayton Hamvention was 19,750, continuing an upward trend over 2009, when we had 18,877 counted through the gates of Hara Arena, according to Public Relations Director Henry Raminski, called W8HJR. While this is a good, positive direction, it's also still a long way from the 10-year record headcount of 28,804 set back in 2000, according to reports. A record 10-year low was noted in 2008 when attendance dipped to 17,253. An all-time high, 33,669 attendees visited the 1993 Dayton Hamvention. That summarization of the attendance was given to us by Hamvention Re-Mailer, W8HJR. Radio amateur arrested after false incident reports. A Connecticut radio amateur has been charged on multiple counts, including falsely reporting an incident, after he used a portable ham radio to play a prank, saying there was a gunman at a local Walmart, authorities allege. Keith J. Much, M-U-T-C-H, 35, of Norwich, was arrested on suspicion of second-degree breach of peace, first-degree reckless endangerment, and first-degree falsely reporting an incident. Quoting, initial investigation by police revealed that store security personnel had heard a report of a man with a shotgun over their two-way radio system, according to an item on Amateur Radio Newsline citing a Norwich Bulletin news story. However, none of the personnel had made the transmission. When police arrived, no gunman was found. A police investigation concluded that Much had used a portable ham radio set to make the transmission. Much has denied involvement. According to the FCC database, Much holds the call sign KB1RBI. That was furnished by ARN and the Norwich Bulletin newspapers. AMSAT Symposium set for October in Chicago. The AMSAT 2010 Space Symposium and annual meeting will be held October 8 through 10 in Chicago, officials said. Events will take place at the Chicago area Elk Grove Holiday Inn near O'Hara Airport. It is the same hotel that hosted the recent Central States VHF Conference and W90XCC events. AMSAT has also put out a call for papers to be presented at the symposium, published a report said. These can be on any topic of interest to amateur satellite community. A final copy must be submitted by September 1, 2010, for inclusion in the printed proceedings. Abstracts and papers should be sent via email to the call sign k9jkm@amsat.org. Burglary prompts suspension of Tunga DX operation. David Lee called W6ZL of Newport, California, canceled the DX operation from Tonga after his guest house room was burglarized. Lee ceased operation of A35KL and returned to the United States in early June. He may be back in Tonga for the CQWW, that's the CQ Worldwide Magazine contest, later this year, published reports said. PSA brings back signaling merit badge for Centennial. In its 100th anniversary year, the Boy Scouts of America has announced the limited return of 4 previously retired merit badges, including signaling. The program's goal is for a majority of registered Boy Scouts to earn one or more of the merit badges during PSA Centennial Year 2010. The badges offered have a history that can be traced back to the origins of the Boy Scouts of America, the organization's website noted. Badges for carpentry, tracking, and pathfinding are also part of the limited return. Requirements must be met no later than December 31, 2010. Original requirements are being used for each badge. The signaling badge requisites, dating to the year 1911, include making an electric buzzer outfit, wireless, blinker, or other signaling device, sending and receiving international Morse code, sending Morse by wigwam or by blinker or any other light device, sending and receiving semaphore, to know the proper application of the international Morse and semaphore codes, when, where, and how they can be used to best advantage, and to discuss briefly various other codes and methods of signaling which are in common use. The signaling merit badge is a great way to encourage hams who are already involved in scouting to mentor this limited-time badge in their troop and perhaps in other ways, such as camps, said ARRL, American Radio Relay League Rocky Mountain Division Director Brian Milchowski, call in 5ZGT. He added that radio amateurs who want to help but are not involved in scouting, especially clubs that have more resources and volunteers, should contact their local Boy Scouts of America Council to inquire about Scoutmasters in their area to contact. We thank the ARRL for that. International EME Conference coming up to Dallas this month. The North Texas Microwave Society is hosting the 14th International EME Conference in Dallas, Texas, August 12 through 14. The lunchtime speaker Friday will be Gerald Youngblood, called K5STR, President and Chief Executive Officer of Flex Radio. On Saturday, Nobel laureate Joe Taylor, K1JT, will speak about the 432 MHz EME event at Arecibo. Presentations will include a noise figure workshop hosted by Al Ward, W5LUA, Tommy Henderson, WD58GO, and Tony Emanuel, WA8RJF. This is the first time the conference is to be held in the United States since 2004, authorities said. UK, the United Kingdom, World War II documents to be put online. Millions of documents stored at Bletchley Park, the United Kingdom's World War II code-breaking center, will soon be made available online, according to the British Broadcasting Corporation. The announcement came after Hewlett-Packard donated a number of scanners to the center in Milton Keynes, so volunteers can begin the task, which is expected to take over 3 years. We thank the British Broadcasting System, BBC, for that commentary. And that concludes World Radio Online Newsfront for August 2010. We'll move along now to the editor's log. The editor for World Radio is Richard Fisher, KI6SN. The editorial director, Richard S. Mawson, W2VU. The editor's log is titled Dayton. Busy, crazy, and so much fun. Thanks. Forgive me for just now getting around to saluting the many World Radio Online readers who took time to stop at the CQ Communications booth at the 2010 Dayton Hamvention. Because of WRO's advanced production schedule, this is my first opportunity to do so. It was great to put faces with the names and call signs of so many readers. I was struck by how many of you are truly invested in this magazine and how painstakingly you offered suggestions for making it better and more useful, pointing out the wrinkles and all. I listened very carefully and took good notes. We were honored to be shoulder to shoulder on the floor of O'Hara Arena with CQ Amateur Radio, CQ VHF, and Popular Communications magazines, and the CQ Communications bookstore. It was busy and crazy and so much fun. This was my first Dayton experience after reading about it all these years. I was still blown away by the sheer magnitude of it all. Words and photographs just can't capture its enormity. In a word, amazing. Again, many thanks to those WRO readers and columnists who introduced themselves at the booth. My sincere appreciation. It was great to meet you. There were 123 people on board for our monthly World Radio Online chat, June the 6th. What a blast that turned out to be, too. The session lasted about an hour and 15 minutes with the freewheeling conversation touching on experiences at the Hamvention and the appearance of our amateur radio stations to the ARRL Field Day, 6-meter DXing, strategies for promotion and recruitment into the ham ranks, and lots more. WRO readers from across North America took part. Portugal, Hawaii, and Australia were represented as well. We were extremely honored to have renowned author M. Walter Maxwell, W2DU, log in to say hello. His 424-page titled Reflections 3, Transmission Lines and Antennas, made its much-anticipated debut at Dayton in May. What a thrill it was to have him on the chat. Walt's book is available in the antenna section of CQ Communications online store. The next live chat will be Sunday, September 12, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, which is 0 UTC, Monday. We expect another wide-ranging discussion, as well as more instant reader polls. Hope you'll take part. To access the session, visit the World Radio Online blog, which is http://www.worldradioonline.blogspot.com. You can register there to receive an email reminder for September 12, as well as see replays of our previous chats. The editor's log is signed Richard Fisher, KI6SN. Our first major commentary is offered by Carl Lutzenschwab, called K9LA, titled The Passing of a Giant, former World Radio Propagation columnist Bob Brown, NM7M, November, Mike 7 Mike, Silent Key, SK. Anyone who has been reading World Radio for a long time will likely recognize the name Bob Brown and his call sign NM7M. He wrote the Propagation column from April 1989 through December 1996, developing a legion of fans and a goldmine of data and analysis along the way. On Sunday, May 23, he passed away in Anacortes, Washington. It is a great loss to the amateur community. I first met Bob in the early 1900s when I was spending lots of time north of L.A. working with an RF power amplifier vendor. I'd stopped by a radio store in the Thousand Oaks area and saw a magazine titled World Radio sitting on the rack. I was pleasantly surprised to find a Propagation column in it written by Bob. After an exchange of letters, I visited Bob in Anacortes on one of my West Coast trips. Our mutual interest in propagation resulted in a long friendship. Bob's understanding of propagation and ionospheric physics was unnatural, as he was a retired professor of physics from the University of California at Berkeley. He was originally licensed in 1937 as a W6PDN, but wasn't active for quite a while. His interest in amateur radio was rekindled in 1981 when he became KA6PTT, and then N7DGZ when he retired to Washington State. Being retired, Bob turned to writing, specifically to educate the masses in propagation issues. He felt there was not only a lack of propagation information out there, but that some of it was incorrect, with no science to back it up. As I write this, thinking about what Bob did for amateur radio with respect to propagation, I am amazed at how prolific he was. It is one thing to understand propagation, but it is another thing to put it on paper. In addition to his World Radio Propagation column, he wrote columns for the Canadian Amateur Magazine, The title of that column was Over the Horizon, and QRP Quarterly, its title was Propagation and DX. If you subscribe to any of the other amateur radio publications, CQ Amateur Radio, the DX Magazine, the Low Band Monitor, QST, NCJ, Communications Quarterly, QEX, you'll recognize Bob's call as the author of a variety of propagation articles. Bob was also a regular contributor to the Top Band Reflector. His interest in 160-meter propagation resulted in many postings, along with many more related articles in the aforementioned publications. He even wrote a book specifically for 160-meter enthusiasts titled The Big Guns Guide to Low Band Propagation. Bob's most recent interest was studying the impact of galactic cosmic rays on top band propagation. He wrote several articles on this subject that were published in CQ. His most notable other books, he wrote a total of five, were Long Path Propagation, which involved a year-long study of long path on the 20-meter band, and The Little Pistol's Guide to HF Propagation, a general work covering the ionosphere and ionospheric HF propagation. It was my pleasure to have known Bob. He was a great teacher, helping me better understand medium frequency and high frequency propagation. Just as propagation is worldwide, Bob's influence was also worldwide. Bob was preceded in death by his wife Mary Lou, an M7N, who was the ARRL Northwest Division Director when she died unexpectedly in 1998. The author of this tribute is Carl Lutz Selschwab, K9LA, propagation columnist for World Radio Online Magazine. Our first featured article for the August 2010 digest of World Radio Online is with the Handy Hams, What's New for the Operator with Disabilities, by Patrick Tice, called WA0TDA. Regular readers know that from time to time I devote a column to what's new in amateur radio equipment and software that is accessible to people with disabilities. Most of the questions I get have to do with what is blind accessible, both for radio hardware and computing. Our largest single accessible technology user group is amateur radio operators who have some kind of reading disability, usually blindness or some degree of vision loss. I think this is probably a long-term trend as more baby boomers encounter age-related deterioration of their eyesight. Macular degeneration is relatively common in older folks and, because of its onset late in life, can catch them off guard and leave them wondering if they can still use a computer or even get on the air effectively anymore. Loss of vision is never good news, but if there is anything at all to cheer about, it is that the technology to help blind and low-vision amateur radio operators to continue to get on the air and to use their equipment effectively has never been better. The problem is that when vision loss happens later in life, it can be both discouraging and overwhelming. A person just doesn't know where to turn for information, and that's why we provide this update in a publication that has a wide circulation worldwide. Perhaps you know someone who can benefit, and if so, please share this information with them. Radios to talk. Transceivers with speech chips that provide blind users with readout of the main dial frequency have been around for a long time, but there have been some notable developments. Kenwood has made a quantum leap with the latest generation speech module, the VGS-1. A dual-purpose option costing about $65, the VGS-1 may be added without soldering to the TS-480SAT, our top recommended HF transceiver for blind users. It also fits the Kenwood TMV-71A 2-meter slant 70-centimeter FM mobile transceiver. We suggest that blind users have the dealer install these circuit boards unless a sighted assistant with technical expertise is available. These Kenwood radios top our list because the user can access not only the frequency readout with the VGS1 switch module, but also the menu options and settings. The TS-480 series covers 160 through 6 meters and is available in a 100-watt SAT version with automatic antenna tuner and an HX version that runs 200 watts but has no internal antenna tuner. The blind or low-vision user will find the SAT version the more useful of the two. Single-button antenna tuning sure beats trying to fiddle around with the manual antenna tuner. Since the radio is completely blind accessible with the menu options being read out by the speech module, you will find that you are really in charge of your station and equipment if you are a blind user. Since FM repeater operation is important to most of us, the TMV-71A, equipped with the VGS-1, will offer similar capabilities and round out your station quite nicely. Another Kenwood radio that has earned its stripes in the blind ham community is the TS-2000, equipped with the optional VS-3 speech module, a $40 accessory. Although the speech technology in the VS-3 is not as versatile as that in the newer generation VGS-1, blind users who are willing to make a serious effort to learn the more complicated interface of the TS-2000 will still find it to be mostly accessible. This radio covers more frequencies and modes and is useful for multi-mode operation on bands such as 2 meters, as well as usual complement of HF bands and frequencies. It is also equipped for satellite operation, although it has more stuff in the box. The downside is that the learning curve is pretty steep. This is not a radio for a blind user who has trouble remembering a rather complicated front panel layout and the basic menu items. Since all TS-2000 radios come equipped with built-in antenna tuners, that useful feature is a plus. These three Kenwood models are the most popular among blind users overall. ICOM HF radios offer more limited frequency readout but provide voice output for the frequency display, mode, and S-meter readings. The most notable new ICOM, and that's ICOM, model is the IC7200-7200, which comes with the built-in speech access standard, not as an optional add-on. It is a rugged, compact radio that covers 160 through 6 meters and offers good performance for around $1,100. Since the speech is built in, there is no additional expense to purchase or install a module. The water-resistant front panel is a plus if you operate portable, and a built-in USB interface allows you to connect directly to a Windows computer without the expense of an extra rig to computer interface. Ham Radio Deluxe supports the IC7200, and ops who prefer computer control will find it a snap to hook up. If you have low vision and use a computer screen magnification program, you may appreciate controlling the IC7200 via computer rather than directly by the front panel. However, the front panel of the IC7200 is well planned and very easy to navigate and memorize. The front firing speaker is also a plus. One thing the radio does not have is a built-in antenna tuner. Kudos to ICOM for including accessory speech right out of the box. Yaesu, that's spelled Y-A-E-S-U, Yaesu, also deserves a shout-out for including voice announcement of frequency, mode, and S-meter reading built-in to the FT-450, which covers 160 through 6 meters. It is available for under $800 with the optional ATU-450 antenna tuner, or for under $900 with the tuner. The frequency readout feature is exceptionally big numerals and has excellent contrast for low vision users. Handheld radios are a special category. We are often asked if there is an HD, handy talkie, that can speak the frequency on the display as the larger radios already discussed can do. Until recently, the answer was no. But Andy Ham volunteers Larry Huggins, call KA0LSG, and Ken Silberman, KB3LLA, both found the new Watson 2-meter, 70-centimeter KG UVD1P HT at Dayton last month. And Larry actually had his radio along to demonstrate to us at Handy Ham Radio Camp. Now for the listener, that new radio that speaks to you, Handy Talkie, is spelled W-O-U-X-U-N. This radio is now available in the United States and offers good quality, a very reasonable price, and English frequency announcements. It has received good reviews on eHam. The tried and true Kenwood THF6A Tri-Band HT is also blind friendly, as we have reported in the past. This excellent radio does not have speech frequency readout like the Watson, but it does cover the 220 MHz band in addition to the usual 2-meter, 70-centimeter bands, and has wideband receive as well. Its keypad and menu system are well designed, and unique beeps help the blind user do just about anything with this rig without having to ask for help once you take the time to really learn the radio. Now, with regard to accessories, automatic antenna tuners have now become popular as standalone accessories, and the ones we have tested are the LDG AT100 Pro and AT200 Pro. Both tuners sense RF radio frequency and tune automatically without any other user intervention. Other manufacturers, such as MFJ and SGC, make tuners with similar or additional features, so you may want to shop around. We use the AT100 Pro in our Handy Ham remote base station, and it has performed flawlessly for our blind and sighted users. Since tuning does not require any special meter reading or knob twisting, it is great for users with disabilities of any kind, including operators who have difficulty using their hands. Talking watt meters and multimeters are always in demand, but the problem is that there is never quite enough demand given the size of the potential market. The result is that meters with speech readout appear on the market, don't do particularly well in sales numbers, and then disappear. However, you may still be able to find some of these useful blind-friendly accessories on the used market. Of particular interest to most blind hams will be the 2LDG Lima Delta Golf, the 2LDG Talking Watt Meters, the TW1 and TW2. They cover HF and VHF respectively and provide speech output readings in a clear voice. Another used market item is the Nextech Talking Multimeter, which sold new for under $40 most places. Right now, we are in a dry spell accessory-wise because no one is offering current models of talking meters for the amateur radio market. Check eBay, Hamfests, and your local dealer's used gear shelf. With respect to remote operation, amateur radio operators with disabilities sometimes have to live in situations where putting up high-frequency antennas is out of the question. One solution is to operate a remote base station, controlling it via the Internet. We offer our members at the Coverage Handy Ham system this option, a Kenwood TS480SAT, equipped for blind use with a voice output, feeding an LDG AT100 Pro automatic antenna tuner. Of course, the user must have access to an internet computer and be able to operate it. Computers these days are much more capable of access by people with disabilities and are considered essential assistive technology tools. Blind users will need a screen reader software program, but will be able to do nearly everything any other user could do with a computer, and that includes operating a ham radio station by remote control. We don't have space to go into accessible computing in this short column, but if you have questions, you can always drop me an email. Another kind of remote operation involves the use of an internet-connected repeater system. Several methods of connecting are available, including wires, WIRES, IRLP, and Echolink. You can use a VHF or UHF FM radio to connect to the Handy Ham Net at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific. Join our worldwide net every day but Sunday. All licensed operators are welcome. The net is controlled but informal, and there is no need to be a Handy Ham member to participate. Sometimes the net control station will throw out a discussion topic to liven things up. Listen in a few times if you are shy, and then take the plunge and throw out your call sign. We are on the air Monday through Saturday, and Sunday if anyone wants to take an informal session. There is also a Wednesday evening Echolink net at 19:30 Central Time, which translates to plus 5 hours, or 00:30 GMT Thursday morning during North American Daylight Time. In the winter, the GMT, Greenwich Mean Time schedule, is plus 6 hours. If you would choose to use Echolink, Handy Ham Conference Server Node 494492, our preferred high-capacity node. So again, Handy Ham's Echolink node 494492. If you choose to use IRLP, the node is 9008 from the Vancouver BC reflector. So, IRLP node 9008. For wires, the wires system number 1427. Wires system number 1427. I know we are barely scratching the surface of ways to get on the air. We haven't even touched on the fun to be had on PSK31 by operators with hearing impairments. It's 2010, and technology is your friend and helper in the ham shack, no matter what your disability. For more information about the Handy Ham system, please contact us at Courage Handy Ham System. Handy Ham is always one word here, H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M. Courage Handy Ham System. 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, MN 55422. Telephone number there, area 763-520-0512. Again, Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. Area code 763-520-0512. You can email me at hamradio, one word, hamradio, at couragecenter, one word, .org. So again, hamradio at couragecenter.org. Our website, www.handyham.org. This article with the Handy Hams is written by Patrick Tice. T-I-C-E, Patrick Tice, call WA0TDA, Whiskey Alpha Zero Tango Delta Alpha, director of the Courage Handy Ham System. I'll turn my attention now to FISTS, F-I-S-T-S, C-W, that's Continuous Wave Club, FISTS, C-W Club. A primer about why C-W is so great. The author here is Randall Noon, KC0CCR. Amazingly, the version of Morse code being pounded by radio amateurs today has been in continuous use for more than 160 years. This is longer than any other electronic encoding system, including the original Morse Veil version of Morse code, sometimes called Railroad Morse. It's clear Morse code has some remarkable attributes to have achieved this longevity. The International Morse Code, or CW for short, used worldwide by amateur radio operators, was originally developed for landline telegraphy in Germany in 1848 by Frederick Gerk, G-E-R-K. After a few developmental changes, it was adapted as the standard landline telegraphy code in Europe at the International Telegraphy Conference in Paris in 1865. With the establishment of regular telegraphy communications between North America and Europe by transatlantic cable in 1866, for various technical reasons, the International Morse Code was favored over the American version of Morse Code. When wireless communications began in the 1880s, the use of the International Morse Code easily crossed over to radio. In the earliest days, code was the only practical method for transmitting messages. Today, even after the invention of many different modes of radio communication, CW is still significant and preferred by many operators. Because it has remained unchanged after all these years, if a CW operator today were to somehow intercept a CW message transmitted a century ago, today's operator would have no trouble carrying on a QSO, a two-way conversation, with yesterday's operator. Unlike any other mode of radio communication, such as voice by AM and FM, single sideband or digital, or the many variants of radio teletype, a licensed operator can use Morse code on any clear frequency in any amateur band with only one exception, the 60-meter band. This is a remarkable privilege granted by both the Federal Communications Commission and the International Telegraphic Union. ITU. Here are some reasons why CW merits this status. CW is simple. On the radio, CW is simply a single transmitted tone that is alternately turned on and off. While electronic keyers or straight keys are usually preferred, CW can be sent using almost any kind of simple switch, including just touching and separating two bare wires. CW is the only digital mode that can be directly decoded by three of the five human senses, sight, sound, and touch. A person can send messages with a flashlight, also Aldus lamp, with a mirror by reflecting sunlight, also heliograph, by tapping an automobile horn, by blowing a whistle, or even by blowing puffs of air through a tube. There are cases where people immobilized by stroke have been able to communicate by blinking in Morse code. In 1966, during a North Vietnam propagation television interview, Navy Commander Jeremiah Denton was able to blink the word torture, T-O-R-T-U-R-E, to American viewers right under the nose of his North Vietnamese captors. Operators who cannot hear a CW tone can see CW displayed on a computer screen, see dotted flashes of light, or can feel CW through a vibrating buzzer. Generally speaking, learning CW is easier than learning to use a keyboard. A telegraph key is much simpler than the 101 separate buttons on a basic computer keyboard. Most students learn to keyboard with modest speed and skill, otherwise known as typing for pre-computer era graduates, in one high school semester of about 14 weeks. This is about 70 classroom hours. Alternately, a person can achieve an equivalent level of competence with CW in less than 20 practice hours. CW waveforms are less subject to distortion. When band conditions are poor, have you ever heard an operator yell into a microphone something like, "No, not pig, I said big, big, B-I-G, big." Perhaps by yelling louder, the operator believes signal readability will improve. Radio signals carrying voice are complex waveforms. When a complex waveform composed of the many tones that make up nuanced speech is refracted, not reflected, by a rapidly changing ionosphere, some tones are attenuated, some are shifted in phase, and some may even be flipped. When a voice signal that has been distorted by poor band conditions is demodulated, the signal may sound like the sender is growling or gargling, or talking through a cellophane wrapper being crinkled. I think I sound that way for you folks a lot, don't I, huh? I'm not proud, I just do my job, folks. Since CW is a simple waveform, it is less subject to distortion. If the tone of a dit or das distorted or phase-shifted, the relative duration of whatever sounds and spacings are heard still provide the needed information. In other words, dits still sound like dits and das still sound like das, even when the original tone is distorted. CW uses little bandwidth. A bandwidth of a CW signal can be estimated by taking the CW speed in words per minute times 4. For example, a 13 word per minute code rate, a middle of the road speed for straight key operators, has a bandwidth of 52 Hz. Similarly, a more seasoned CW operator sending 25 words per minute with a keyer has a signal bandwidth of about 100 Hz. Compare this with RTTY, that's radio teletype, which has a bandwidth of about 250 Hz, single sideband, which has a bandwidth of about 2600 Hz, narrowband FM voice, which has a bandwidth of about 6000 Hz, AM voice, which has a bandwidth of about 7000 Hz, or amateur television that can have a whopping bandwidth of 6 million hertz or more, and so on. Besides being able to carry more QSOs in a given band, the small bandwidth of CW is significant with respect to interference, which is most severe when the interference bandwidth can fit within the bandwidth of the signal carrying information. Conversely, interference is less a problem when the signal has a significantly smaller bandwidth than the interference. Interference that can render a single sideband signal unintelligible may not even be noticed in a CW QSO. Small bandwidth also improves signal brightness or punch. The one mode that challenges CW to the title Lowest Bandwidth King is BPSK31. It has a nominal bandwidth of 32 Hz, and a person can send up to 50 words per minute by typing on a computer keyboard. Next to CW, BPSK31 is a favorite of QRPers, low-power operators who like to use computer-assisted digital modes. Having used both BPSK31 and CW, I can vouch that under conditions in which BPSK31 sends jumbled letters, a CW signal with the same power output on the same band still gets through. It is remarkable that a CW operator may vary both bandwidth and signal brightness right at the key. While a person may argue that 7 words per minute is a slow speed, when conditions are poor, the alternative may be no message at all. Finally, here's a reminder for September the 10th. Mark your calendars for the 2010 Get Your Feet Wet CW event, which begins 0 UTC, Universal Time Constant, on Friday, September 10, and goes to 0 UTC September 13. The event is sponsored by FISTS, but any licensed operator can enter. Operators new to CW, Morse code, even if you have had a license a long time, and experienced brass pounders are encouraged to participate. No programmable keys, code readers, or computer assistance in sending and receiving code are allowed. Just human-powered CW from straight keys, cooties, iambics, and human-powered keyers. How's that for the rules, huh? For more detailed rules and even downloading log sheets, you can go to www.fists.org on the web and check under the activities heading Get Your Feet Wet Weekend. Certificates will be awarded to the top 3 scorers in each category. This is a fun event, so please join us on September 10th, 2010 for the FISTS Get Your Feet Wet CW event. Folks, this is your reader, Bob Zeta. Just a side comment regarding this primer about why CW is so great by Randall Noon. I must tell you, he did a fine job. It sounds sort of complicated, and in lots of ways it is, especially to a person who's not at all familiar with it, having never studied it or whatever. But it really is a wonderful way to become involved in amateur radio. Someone's going to help you to learn more about it if you give yourself a chance. Why don't you try amateur radio, most especially the CW Morse code portion. It's a great challenge. Well, before I go much further, I think I should give you a little briefing on the Hamfests, that's amateur radio flea markets, sort of, and special events for the month of August and into September. State of Maryland special event station W1H Whiskey One Hotel, operated by the Antietam Radio Association, that's called W3CWC, on August 14, 15. In commemoration of Hiram Percy Maxim, W1AW, who married the daughter of the governor of the state of Maryland and is buried in Hagerstown, Maryland's Rose Hill Cemetery. Ohio, special event station K8FBN, Kilo 8, Fox Bravo, November, from the 29th Annual Sweet Corn Festival, Fairborn, Ohio, August 21 and 22. Colorado Denver Radio Club Hamfest, August 22nd. That's from the Jefferson County Fairgrounds, 15200 West 6th Avenue, Golden, Colorado. I think there's a well-known brewery up there around the corner, too, in good old Golden, Colorado. But check the Denver Radio Club Hamfest first. Heading back down south to Louisiana, special event station K5R, Kilo 5 Romeo. The Southeast Louisiana Amateur Radio Club will be sponsoring the 5th Annual Special Event Station K5R to commemorate the anniversaries of, you know what, Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. Operations Saturday and Sunday, August 28 and 29, from 1400 to 2000 Universal Time Constant each day. State of Kansas, Kansas QSO Party, August 28-29. Now, reaching into September, State of New York Special Event Station KC2RA, Kilo Charlie 2 Romeo Alpha, on the air during this year's Kings County Repeater Association's annual 9/11 Memorial Event, takes place a short walk from Ground Zero on Friday, September 10. State of Florida Special Event Station K4MIA, Kilo 4 Mike India Alpha, commemorating National POW MIA Recognition Day. That'll be on the air from September 15th through the 19th. Let's take a trip to Mars. Whoops, wait a minute. That's not the planet. That's military affiliate radio systems. Aye, aye. Attention ARRL, Amateur Radio Relay League. It's your anniversary, too, and a notable date in ham history. This is by Bill Sexton and Juan I.N. Just in case somebody needs an excuse for a party, there's a blockbuster birthday coming up for the amateur radio community in general, and the ARRL in particular, on August 7th. That's the day 85 years ago when the United States Army Signal Corps formally recognized the League as spokesman for this country's hams. The American Radio Relay League is, in the opinion of this office, fitted to serve as a representative of the transmitting radio amateurs of this country, wrote Major General C. M.C. K. Saltzman, the chief signal officer. He invited the League to partner with the Army in forming what's now known as MARS, M-A-R-S, the Military Auxiliary Radio System. The ARRL, which had some competition in early days from another organization trying to recruit amateurs, jumped at the opportunity. It really was a turning point in radio history, not just validating the ARRL's stature, but more importantly asserting the national security commitment that justifies the amateur services frequency allocations to this day. What a grand rationale this anniversary offers the two parents of MARS to sit down once again as they did in 1925 and re-examine our overall role in the light of 21st century needs. Even though 9 years have passed since 9/11, there's still no clear definition of who does what, much less who's to coordinate our haphazardly splintered and indifferently utilized capabilities. We wait and yearn for leadership. A lot of us hams, anyway. If that seems a harsh judgment, go ahead and rough out your own chart showing all the ham entities involved in emergency communications. Then, try to figure out how they could ever mount a coherent response to national catastrophe. Don't forget to add, react, cert, American Red Cross, Salvation Army, and the Coast Guard Auxiliary to RACIS, ARIS, and the three independent Mars branches. No doubt there are others. Who coordinates frequencies? Who sorts and relays situation reports? Talk about a potential for confusion, jammed frequencies, vanished pieces of information. Meanwhile, competition for spectrum mounts explosively, and agencies increasingly turn to hired hands for services that we, hams, gladly offer for free, but have neglected to package effectively. Some mighty sizable issues are ripe for discussion if Mars and the ARRL and their governmental partners somehow get together for an 85th year commemoration. There's a long-ignored need for a joint command mechanism to replace the three separate chains of command in Mars. Also, the mostly imagined competition and not-so-imaginary overlap between ARRL and Mars MCOM network activity needs to be rationalized so that the two don't trip over each other in a disaster. And instead of talking vaguely of interoperation, the whole Emergency Management Committee must begin fitting amateur responders into the professional response architecture, the same way part-time volunteer firemen are legitimatized and utilized throughout the public safety world. Like the firefighters, hams aren't the problem for the EMA leadership. They're the solution. The problem is runaway budgets, obviously, as EMA full-time staff expands despite the fortunate rarity of E, emergencies, to M, manage. Off to the side, Mars could offer ARRL members some excellent openings for broadening their expertise in government communications. Army Mars membership is down to around 1,000 compared to the 2,800 members reported only 3 years ago. Operator and leadership opportunities abound, and truly, Mars is a great place for expanding one's operational and/or technological horizons. With fresh leadership stepping forward at the Pentagon, at Newington, and in Mars itself, there could hardly be a better time for new beginnings, even at the age 85. I condensed this article quite a bit, folks, but it was authored by Bill Sexton. And one IN. And folks, for those of you who want to hear your name in print or on a condensed version of World Radio Magazine for that matter, John B. Johnston, W3BE, writes The Rules Say every month just about in the publications. It's in Rules and Regulations. I don't usually go through those very defined explanations to various questions because those are very specific. However, John B. Johnston always picks a ham of the month, or super ham of the month. And so this month's appreciation notice goes to Ed Reddington, now called W3NZ, Whiskey 3 November Zulu. And he's shown in the picture on page 39 at the Virginia Beach Hamvention. Congratulations, Ed. I'll conclude our presentation of World Radio for August 2010 online today with a part of a promotion and recruitment session. It's titled The Power of Demonstration, Our Top Recruiting Model. The offer here is Devere, or D, Logan, call W1HEO. Ask any group of radio hams how they became interested in our hobby, and they'll probably recall the details of their first personal demonstration of amateur radio. Experiencing firsthand the excitement of chatting with someone in a faraway country or simply across town can be very impressive. Who can forget the name of their Elmer and the exact circumstances of that memorable event? As most marketing professionals say, personal experience with a product is often the important first step in making a sale. And so it is with amateur radio. A person-to-person contact is a powerful beginning to sparking an interest in joining our ranks. Each of us can become a personal ambassador for amateur radio by offering to demonstrate it in action. The spark can be ignited during casual conversations, in which we share some interesting radio anecdotes from our own experience. Think of the many opportunities we have to do this. Wherever there's a casual gathering, opportunities await. at work, with friends, relatives, at social events, in the neighborhood, club meetings, and many other places we can plant the seeds of potential interest. I had an interesting chat with a fellow, Ham, in England last weekend, you might say. He was explaining the rules of cricket, and I was comparing it with baseball. Never underestimate the power of unique personal experiences such as this. Following such a comet might be a personal invitation to visit our shacks for a personal demonstration. Radio clubs have a wonderful opportunity to demonstrate on-air operations during the annual ARRL Field Day. Not only does it showcase our radio service, but it also can promote club membership. Let's take a quick look at Contest Corner before we leave the readings for this month. The ARRL UHF contests is on August the 7th through August the 8th. TARA Grid Dip contest efforts, they're on August the 7th. The 1010 International Summer Contest, that's always a biggie in the world of amateur radio. Their 10-meter phone single sideband AM or FM contest is August the 7th through August the 8th. Those are weekends, usually. The North American CUSO Party, which is 160 meters through 10 meters. This is CW only. That's Morse code. We had a lot to say about Morse code in this recording. That's also on the August and 7th and 8th dates. Of course, it's regarding the Dits and Das people. There's another part to that contest, the North American CUSO Party for Voice, or phone, as we call it. The 80-meter through 10-meter single sideband contest is on August 21st and 22nd. So, you can see there's a lot of opportunity, even if you don't have a license yet, in ham radio. If you have a receiver that can take these frequencies in, you might get a lot of listening time in at the same time as you're enjoying what amateur radio can be potentially for you. And I'll close with just one more entry. There are quite a few, but I don't want to put you to sleep. I've got you this far in the recording. If you want to listen to people talk about wonderful Hawaii, but never got to go there, I have never been there, I don't think I'm going to make it. They have a great CUSO party on the 28th of August through the 29th of August, and that's all kinds of different frequencies, and of course all the different modes, 160 through 10 meters, single sideband, the CW, the RTTY, which is teletype, and the PSK modes. So you can see there are a lot of great opportunities to either participate in or at least listen to. Well, there we are, just about up to time, folks, here on the Courage Handy Ham Systems reading of World Radio Online for the month of August 2010. World Radio is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 Newbridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. The managing editor is Richard S. Mawson, called W2VU. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address, one word, Handy Ham, that's spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, at Courage, C-O-U-R-A-G-E, .org. Handy Ham at Courage.org. Our website is maintained every day. It's beautifully put together and very, very effective. It's www.handyham.org. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts, right down here in southeastern Mass, about 50 miles from Boston. We're sort of the gateway to good old Cape Cod, right on Buzzards Bay. Thanks again for listening along with me here on the Courage Handy Ham System to the readings of World Radio Online Edition, August 2010.